It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 252-247-7282, and let's talk legal.
And good morning and welcome to the program here with Let's Talk Legal here on the Talk Station. I'm Ben, along with Mike, who is going to be taking my place eventually after the end of the year. Cecil and Wes are here with us. Good morning, Cecil, and good morning, Wes.
Good morning, gentlemen.
We feel outnumbered all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm in a different mic.
Three against two.
I've been in the same mic for 15 years.
Exactly.
All of a sudden, I'm in a different mic.
Yeah, and there are three of you and just two of us. Right. We better know what we're talking about, huh?
All right. So what are we talking about today?
We are going to talk about capacity to make out a last will and testament.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And Ben, this is a great topic. You know, what does it mean when someone has capacity to make out a last will and testament? There's, of course, a legal standard that we're about to talk about. But I can tell you right now that in layman's terms, that capacity does not mean that, you know, that we know every balance in our account, that we know every single, you know, address to our properties, because addresses change, that we know the make and the model and the year of our car and the last time that it had its tires rotated, okay? this is not what the law requires. So, Mr. Collins, I know you know it backwards and forwards just like I do. What is the legal standard for capacity? Three elements, right?
It's really just three elements, and it's a pretty low standard. Just to know the natural objects of your bounty, which that's the terminology that you learn in law school and that applies as far as this goes. But to know the natural objects of your bounty is to know who would be your typical beneficiaries under your will. For example, who your family is.
Right.
Who your spouse is, who your kids are, you know, maybe who your grandkids are, but just the immediate unit, you need to know who those folks are. Okay, that's number one. Number two, you need to have, or at least have the capacity to know what you own, what you have, what real property you have, where you bank, where you have any investments, generally. Mm-hmm. Not to the penny, because most people walking down the street don't know what they have to.
Yeah,
the
right,
penny,
right.
You know, as far as that goes. But to have that capacity and to have a general understanding and the capacity to have that understanding of what you own, and then to have the capacity to understand that you're making a will and the effect of the document.
Mm-hmm.
Know that this is what I'm doing, this is what the will does, and I have the capacity to understand that this is indicating, you know, where my assets are going to go, who my executor is, you know, upon my death, those type things. So, you know, a lot of times in these cases when we're talking about capacity and maybe someone's challenging capacity or challenging a will, the word competency gets thrown around. Mm-hmm. Are they competent? What does competency mean? Well, that's just an improper use of the word. Competency is a completely different issue.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Capacity to execute a will is one thing, and that's what we're talking about today. Competency, completely different issue. You can be someone who is legally incompetent. I mean, the court has adjudicated you incompetent. That doesn't mean that you don't have the capacity to execute a will.
Capacity is a fairly low bar.
It's a low bar. It's a very low bar. So if you are adjudicated incompetent, you still might have the capacity to understand who natural objects of your bounty are, what your assets are, and the effect of the document, even though you really can't handle your day-to-day affairs.
Right.
For example, sometimes folks are adjudicated incompetent based on an intermittent situation, like bipolar, schizophrenia, where we have manic episodes. Things come up where we kind of lose it.
Right.
The person is just off their medication. They're not able to take care of whatever the issues are. They wander down the road. And in that particular situation, we need a guardian to be able to intervene to require this adult to
keep them on track,
to go back home,
right,
to go to the, you know, those kind of things. And the way that works kind of in the real world is this. if you have someone who has an intermittent competency issue, then if you don't have a guardian for that person, then if you go to the authorities, for example, mm-hmm. and say, my mother, who has mental illness, is wandering, she's not on her medications, I want you to arrest her or take custody of her and right. get her in this safe place. Do you know what the authorities are going to say? I'm sorry, she's an adult. I can't do that. She's not doing anything illegal. But if you are that person's guardian, then you are acting for that person, then the authorities are going to help you in that regard. So you can kind of see, that's just mm-hmm. an example, mm-hmm. that in certain situations, you may certainly be adjudicated incompetent, but still have the capacity, to enter a will. So mm-hmm. it's a relatively low standard.
Okay. So Ben, as you can imagine, these three elements are up front and center in kind of a practical way, the practice of law from the get-go. I mean, the first question to any client is, what is your name? What is
right,
your name?
Right.
Okay. The next question, I understand you're here to make out a last will and testament. Tell me about your family. Are you mm-hmm. married?
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm widowed. Well, how many children did you have?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Tell me, do those children...
No, I have two. I can't always remember their names.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, right.
How many children do they have? Well, Sally's got one child, but she got remarried, and she has another child, but I don't know whether she legally adopted that one or not. Mm-hmm. I think it's a stepchild, but she only had one baby that I recall, that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So you get the family history from the client. And of course, at any of these points, even the name question, the client could, be unable to answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
Or the child, tell me about your family. The next question, of course, is tell me a little bit, where do you live? Where's your home? Well, it's, in Newport on Moore Road.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ms. Jones, that's great. Do you own other lands other than your home? No, I don't have any land other than my home. Well, tell me where you bank. Well, I bank up at the First Citizens in Newport because mm-hmm. it's convenient to my home. So what I'm saying is that the rubber hits the road pretty quickly
right.
as to whether
right.
or not the clients can answer these questions. And something just as fundamental as I just described is all that we need. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The next question is, well, tell me, Mrs. Jones, what would you like for the will to say? You have these three children, you say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want everything to go equally to them? Yes, I do, or no, I don't. This mm-hmm. is what I want because, again, and you're here for us to be able to begin the process of making out a last will and testament. And you, of course, Ms. Jones, know what that means. That means that's how your estate is going to be distributed mm-hmm. when something happens to you. Yes, I understand that, and I need you to do that for me because the one I have, my husband and I did 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And all the names have changed, and I don't know that all it did was appoint my husband as executor. So, you begin to really have a feel for this capacity issue, very early on in the file based on just this, based on this interview that you're having.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a spectrum here, if you will, of capacity. There's the type of capacity that I just kind of alluded to in our factual scenario where the Mrs. is really able to answer all of those questions very straightforward. There's also a middle ground where they're confused. Okay. There's some confusion. And you detect that,
mm-hmm.
okay? They're able to tell you their name. They're able to tell you maybe one or two children, but they're not real sure. They can't answer any questions at all about the banking, but they guess on that. I don't know. You'll have to check with my son Joe. He knows mm-hmm. about that.
Right.
Well,
right.
That's kind of a middle ground, and we lawyers then would, in those kinds of files, we would meet with the client on more than one occasion because people have good days and bad days, don't
mm-hmm.
they?
Mm-hmm.
People have days where they can remember things very, very well, and they have other days where they just aren't doing as well that day.
So lucidity mm-hmm. at any given time becomes mm-hmm. an issue, becomes a mm-hmm. a measuring stick?
lucid interval.
Yeah.
That's what the cases say. They mm-hmm. say that, you know, you can execute a will during a lucid interval. It doesn't have to be that you're consistently with capacity to sign a will at all times during your life at this station in your life. But as we know, you know, mm-hmm. some elderly folks especially are better at, you know, typically in the morning, from what I understand,
yes.
than
the sundowners yeah. kind of situation. Mm-hmm. So, yes, lucid interval. But, you know, Mr. Lawyer needs to be obviously very careful about that, you know, to protect their client, mm-hmm. you know, to make sure that we're not, you know, they're not being influenced by someone else. There's all kind of things that are happening that, you know, that the lawyer is keen to in the event you're in that like 1% type case that might be somewhat of a close call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you've got certain circumstances, like it appears that someone else is kind of pushing the train forward on mm-hmm. this thing,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, you got to pump the brakes a little bit and make sure that this person has the capacity, make sure this person is not being influenced by someone else. A lot of times the proof is in the pudding, though.
Mm-hmm.
What is this person wanting in their will?
Right.
Does it sound like
right.
that they're just regurgitating what someone told them in the car and has repeated to them over and over and over and over and over and over again to try to get their
right.
estate when they die? Or is it your typical distribution? Is it, you know, all to the spouse, you know, then to the kids, you know, that kind of situation? Or is it something that's different?
So it's one thing when somebody has that middle ground, like you were talking about, where they may not remember the name of the bank. Well, frankly, banks change names
they do,
so often
right,
now.
Right.
But they all of a sudden seem to be very well rehearsed, or there's red flags coming up in what
right.
they want.
Yep.
So.
And these are the rare cases. I mean, 99% of the situations as an attorney, when you're sitting down with a client at the execution of the will, you don't have these issues at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all... You can kind of tell, obviously, you can tell when someone clearly has the capacity
mm-hmm.
By just having a conversation with them and discussing, you know, what you want, what's going on, family,
right.
where your assets are, all the things that Cecil just went through. But that 1% case is where you really have to get direct with certain things.
If you have a question, you can call us right now at 252-247-7282. Hey, welcome back here at Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, and we're just talking about the retirement too.
right.
Have to get that estate plan ready.
Get your affairs
right, Ben.
Already.
Yeah.
So, Ben, on the spectrum, we like to call it, or I like to call it that, you might have some hesitation, some confusion during one of these, if you will,
sure.
intervals. And in cases like that, we turn to the family or even the client and say that we'd like to get, you know, just a very simple statement from the doctor
mm-hmm.
that Mrs. Jones is able to handle her affairs and able to make significant decisions. And the doctors are familiar with these requests.
Mm-hmm.
They come their way pretty often, all things considered, and usually within a week or so we'll get a statement from one of our good doctors here in the community
mm-hmm.
to the effect, because they tend to know
mm-hmm.
You know, the mental state, if you will, of their patient. So that is certainly helpful in the file. And then, of course, lastly, we have, as you would imagine, clients that just are clearly just not able
mm-hmm.
to make a significant decision for themselves. They just are bedridden at that point. They're hardly able to communicate whatsoever
mm-hmm.
with the lawyer. And so that's that far extreme of mm-hmm. the spectrum.
Yeah, Mike, I was going to say that one of the things that we've learned over the years mm-hmm. here is that if you can take care of some of these issues, the red flags that come up ahead of time, it's a whole lot easier than doing it later.
Before you're bedridden.
Yeah.
But back to that middle zone a minute, because that's where all the quote good stuff is, isn't it? That's
mm-hmm.
where the questions are.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, I want to confirm that there is absolutely the interval. I have been with clients in the morning at a nursing home or at their home, where they tell me, these are my three children. I want everything three ways. And I will go back to see them the next day, and they don't remember who I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they are unable to tell me what they told me just the day before.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That puts the lawyer in a tough spot.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you go back again, because in those, the totality of the circumstances, mm-hmm. you know that on Monday, she was able to say who the three children were and that she wanted everything to go three ways. But on Tuesday, she had forgotten that, mm-hmm. forgotten that we had a meeting. So you want to go back again and just see exactly where your client happens to be with regard to the next visit. And you work through it in that way.
The capacity only matters at the time of execution.
Well, Cecil, how do you, when you're interviewing a family like that example you just put out there in the nursing home, and your client says, "I have three children."
Yes.
Do you take their word for it, or do you do due diligence afterwards and actually see that they have three children? Because sometimes it could be just like a long-term friend of the family that I kind of, that's my son, but really isn't blood.
Right.
Or may have died.
And then the other two siblings hear that and say, "Oh my God, mom's bringing in, you know, Tommy from across the alley. He's not mm-hmm. my brother, but she thinks he is."
Right.
Yeah.
You know, how do you as an attorney, as a firm, handle that situation?
Well, we, as you know, would get information just as you're mentioning, maybe from another child, maybe from a grandchild, that that she always thinks there's three children, but you know, my brother died, you know, 5 years ago. She's just never accepted that, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So we will get information from other sources.
Yeah. It does put you in a hard
place. Yeah. It does. Sign. You know, as the attorney, you never know what will is going to be challenged by, you know, the long lost whomever at some point in time later on. So, mm-hmm. you know, when you deal with so many of these wills over the years, it's kind of hard to remember that particular execution that took place 5 years ago or 10 years ago
mm-hmm.
Of the document. So what I always do, and what I think is the appropriate way to do this, is I always ask the question of the client to name your children. Mm-hmm. I don't say, mm-hmm. all right, now you have three children and they're Mike, Sally, and Sue, right?
Right.
No, because that's giving them the answer.
Yeah. You're leading them.
So then, you know, if 10 years later, if I'm sitting there across from an attorney who's challenged the will, and they're asking me questions about it, I can say, no, I don't really remember this, but I can tell you every single time, because this is the way I do it. I always ask the client how many children you have, and for them to give me the names.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, you know, we've had just out of the hundreds, so many wills we do, we've had such a very small handful of those be challenged. Sure. A couple of which that Cecil has been involved in, and that's just circumstances. Mm-hmm. It just happens. You know, sometimes you have, and what has been so helpful in those type situations is that Cecil does an excellent job of taking down information from the client, writing down the names, writing down what the client is telling them about what money they have, where it is, what property they have. You never know 5-10 years later when those notes that you got from this person
mm-hmm.
are going to be very valuable. So how is Cecil going to get this information, or me when I'm taking down my notes? How are we going to get this information without it coming, you know, from the client? And that's the way we always do it.
Mm-hmm.
We sit there with the client, and we get the information from the client, and that proof is in the pudding. You've got the names of the kids. You got the name of the spouse. You got where we're banking. You've got how much we have there. We've got where our property is. And we might have other extraneous information about what the person did when they were working, or where they've lived before, or just stuff like that, that those notes show this is what this person was telling us at this date. So that's pretty strong evidence to show that they had the capacity. But again, this is such a very small percentage of the cases that you deal with. Most folks take care of this before we get to that point.
Right, right.
But you do have a small percentage that they fall into that spectrum, that's kind of the gray zone.
Mm-hmm.
And just taking those notes and asking the appropriate questions and doing it the same way every time is just worth its weight in gold in the event there's a challenge later on.
Wes, I'm not an attorney, but I hang out in courtrooms a lot, so I feel like I know a little
right.
bit. But I bet you, of the three criteria for the capacity, the knowing the family members, the financial, and the effects of the document, I bet it's the financial that has the most challenges or, you know, work to do around it. Because you could sit with a client today and 15 years later, that financial picture could change when
right.
time comes to divvy up the assets.
Right.
So,
yeah, I mean, no doubt about that. I mean, it can change, but you can also look back at your notes and compare, let's say, bank statements from that point in time. And in many cases, you know, our file will include bank statements that we may get at a later date after we take the notes, just to kind of might ask the client, you know, bring by your most recent account statement, that kind of thing. And we might cross-check that with the information mm-hmm. that they've
but
given
the language
to us.
Of the will wouldn't be so time-specific as to limit you no. what would happen in years past. It would,
no.
it would allow you to bring in whatever assets are available.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
So,
because the last will and testament is not going to specifically mention, or in our opinion mm-hmm. at Harvell and Collins, should not, you know, mention, you know, my account at Wells Fargo, my CD
or account number
at you know, the credit union, or my IRA at such and such an institution, because all that information is always changing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. More to come in a moment here with Let's Talk Legal. Still time for your call at 252-247-7282. We're back with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And also we're talking about the capacity level, the bar to reach in order to create a will. So I was asking during a break if duress or undue influence plays a role sometimes
right.
in determining even a capacity case.
It does. And Ben, you know, when you look at a challenge to a will, really there's several different areas that you deal with. Okay. Mm-hmm. The first one would be lack of capacity. That's what we talked about today. The next will be undue influence.
Mm-hmm.
That's like someone who may be susceptible because of old age, that they may be leaving their estate in a way that's unusual, that's inconsistent with the way that their previous will stated. They're maybe being influenced by, you know, a caregiver or a family member or something like that, someone like that. So undue influence, substituting your influence for the person who's signing. So that's, you usually see that in a will challenge. Next would be, failure to adhere to the technical requirements of a will.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently had a case where a will was set aside because the witnesses at a lawyer's office whose names were on the will didn't actually see it being signed.
Right.
And we were
right.
able to establish that, which is rare, but we were technical requirements. And then the fourth and last area that you don't see as much, but it is available to challenge a will based on duress.
Mm-hmm.
Duress is kind of similar to undue influence, but duress will be more of a situation where the person is being forced into signing the document at the time, or maybe they're even being tricked into signing something if they're blind or whatever.
Right, right.
It's tricked into signing something that's not really what they're being told it is. So duress is something that you can look at. Don't see it quite as much because the elements for duress are harder to prove than undue influence.
Hmm.
So those are the things you see in a will challenge, you know, case. But today we have focused on the capacity necessary to sign the will.
All right. You want to find out more? You want to call on the folks at Harvell and Collins? Go to harvellandcollins.com. Listen to past shows. You'll see them all by subject matter there too. And you can also call for an appointment at 252-726-9050 at 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City.